So they stay on the show website the entire time, which they said people were complaining about going out, that it was not quite the show experience. It was just kind of like an advertisement.
Wait,
So
can you speak up a little or move closer to the microphone?
don't know where my microphone is. Me see. Headphones. Okay. Can you hear me better?
A little bit. I got to turn my volume up, and I'm not sure if it's the volume or you.
It's usually, I was in a meeting already today and nobody complained, so.
Okay, then it's me. That's all
Okay.
right.
So did you hear what I said?
No, say it again.
Okay. The one part I really liked about Event Me that she pointed out is that customers have been complaining that a virtual show was just, they had to keep going to artist websites, then come
Oh,
back
right.
to the show. And that now with Event Me, they'll all be on the same page and they can kind of like browse better.
Right. No, I understand that. And that's that, and the fact that it's a simple shopping cart that all anything you pick from any artist goes into the same shopping cart. You only have to pay once. Hi, Erica.
Hi.
Happy Monday.
Yeah, happy voting Eve.
Yes.
Hi, Bonnie.
I created my monthly newsletter today and I'm sending it out on the 9th. Hopefully, because I'm clearing out political emails out of my inbox. It's just a nightmare.
So, Allison, here's a question for you. With that email list that you speak of, for all the folks who are on it, was it more of a passive collection process, more of an active collection process to gather this email list, for instance, at shows?
I gathered them at shows. Now I do have a link on my website and I've picked up some more since then. And I do have it set up to send them out a coupon code for $10 off shipping, up to $50 off of shipping.
But then, literally at the shows, was it a passive process where you had a clipboard on a table? If it's an active process, what would you literally say to recruit folks to your email list?
Basically, I send out a free small pano print once a month to somebody from the email list. So that was my, it's like a mason jar out, and then had little cards that said, name, email, address, and put a sign on it that said, that it was a raffle for a free small pano print is sent out once a month to somebody from the email list.
Okay, and so go ahead, sorry.
Only one person has taken me up on that. It's funny. But I know that I was sending out, I need to put the subject line. I have changed the subject line because it doesn't say, you don't want to say, congratulations, you're a winner, because that throws you right into the spam box.
Okay, and so from there, then people generally, it sounds like, took that as consent to receive your, be it MailChimp or Constant Contact newsletter, that they dropped their card in there.
Yes.
That's interesting. So instead of a clipboard with a form that everybody puts their stuff on, you're actually having them put cards in a
Wasn't
jar.
getting any that way. I think that people are getting more private with their emails. So that gave them a way for it to be private.
Okay. What'd you say? How many people have actually put their card in there?
I've got now Over 400. I'm not sure how many.
Over how long a period?
Over a couple years.
Okay.
So I had an email list way back when. I kind of abandoned it. And when I retired, I thought, okay, we better get a little more serious about this. And I'm with MailerLite, which gives me a few other options.
What is it, Allison?
MailerLite. It connects nicely in with Shopify, which I'm on. Although Shopify now has their own email, but now I finally figured out how to use MailerLite.
Is that a free email program?
Up to 1,000, yes.
Okay. Yeah, because I'm having a hard time with MailChimp.
What's it not doing for you, Larry?
Like I sent this email out, it took me 45 minutes to get it to send. Because it kept telling me you have a line in there that's part of their advertising, but yet I didn't see it and it didn't show up when I sent myself a test.
Oh.
So I don't know what was going on.
I used MailChimp for a while. I never had any problems like that, but I wanted something that integrated with Shopify.
Mm-hmm.
MailerLite, I don't know if MailChimp allows you to do this too, is I've got triggers set up. So that when somebody signs up, they immediately get the email that says, welcome, and here's your codes for free shipping.
Okay, I wonder how Eventney is doing the shipping.
Each artist is doing their own shipping.
Yeah.
But are the people paying for that through Eventney and then they take a percentage?
Yeah. Yes.
Yes.
So you're losing the percentage on your shipping.
Yes. Which is why I did not put any plain pieces on the Venti. Because the shipping is so expensive. So I just did the prints and the canvas gallery wraps.
Allison, when you said you were giving away a print every month in the raffle, then what kind of print was that?
It's a small, I do panorama prints, so it's a 4.25 by 17.5 inch print. It doesn't cost me a lot to do. I think it was you, Larry, who suggested, I was doing it every 6 months, and somebody suggested do it every month.
I don't know. I know that it's the people, I don't know how to do it, how to figure that out. I know that when we built Jim DeLutis's website, everybody that signed up for his mailing list got a free mouse pad. So he must have gotten 1,000 or 100,000 mouse pads with one of his pictures on it.
Oh, that's... That sounds a little expensive. I got a mouse pad made for myself. Yeah.
I still have one of Ginny Herzog's mouse pads. I think it was Coconut Grove used one of her pictures, and they had mouse pads printed or something, besides the poster.
I'll just switch from my personal to my business background. Another thing I learned, which was real useful, I just tried it last month in October, was that you have to do it kind of a convoluted way in MailerLite if you don't have to paid subscription, but it's to pick everybody that didn't open the mailing mail and resend it to those people who didn't open it and resend it at a different time of day. And I got another 6%. Since COVID, the open rate has been really low. I suspect there's...
The other thing is the people that are at work usually use the computer at work a lot. for stuff. I remember seeing statistics that the times of day that websites got the most traffic were during 9 to 5
mm-hmm.
on weekdays.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure. I always send it on a weekday.
So has anybody done, have there been any shows in the last week? In, even in Florida, have there been anything?
I think there has been a Howard Allen show in Florida.
Yeah, I mean, he's the only one that, although I see Patty's shows being advertised.
I don't pay much attention to Florida, I don't.
Well, that's the only place in the country where they're having shows right now. It's kind of weird.
I did my Florida experiment, and it was the experiment was a success. It said, don't go back to Florida. yeah, I've got 3 virtual shows coming up, 2 running at the same time.
I have a 1-day coming up on Saturday, about an hour and a half from me. It's kind of a makeshift program that a lady's just putting on. She's another artist or crafter, and she's just decided to take on her promotions hat just so that some of us can get together and do. It's probably going to be a small show. I think she's got 69 or 70 people total, but it's in a huge convention center. They can have up to 1,800 people in there at a time. Yeah, so it's going to be small. I'm not expecting a lot, but I'm hoping for some small, you know, gifty type things.
You're in Wisconsin, right?
I am.
Yeah.
Hotspot.
Don't you have rules on how many people can be in the area?
Yeah, it depends on what county you're in. The most strict counties are like 25% of capacity, but still with 1,800 people. I don't think it falls into that county. In fact, we were told it does not. But even if it did, we're not going to have anywhere near that capacity anyway. It's going to be a, you know, check-in, check-out, one-way in, one-way out type thing, and they are doing a head count. Huge spaces between booths. It is indoors. Of course, we're November in Wisconsin. It was 30-something degrees this weekend. So, you know, just crossing our fingers, it all works out. Everybody's going to be wearing a mask. We all have hand sanitizer. I don't know what more we can do other than not have a show and just
and
stay
booths are spread apart.
Oh yeah. Quite far. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, be careful.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. And our booths are 10 by 12 plus space in between. I think, I don't know how many feet are between each. You know, they want you to set up in a 10 by 10. They're giving you at least another 2 feet on each side plus space in between. I know that there's, it's going to be more. It's probably going to be more like 10 feet between booths, I'm sure. I'll report in next week.
Yeah. I'm still trying to decide whether to order a 3rd awning so I can put work on the outside walls, but my next physical show will be at least May.
Where are you at in Wisconsin?
I'm in a little town just north west of Madison. The show itself is in Brookfield, Wisconsin, so it's over more towards the Waukesha area, not quite Milwaukee, but, you know, probably 30, 40
minutes. I know where
minutes.
Brookfield is.
Pardon me?
I do know where Brookfield is.
Oh, okay. Yep, that's where it is.
I do, too, because when you do lakefront, Milwaukee is so busy during the summer that we all have to stay out in Brookfield.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, some of us can't get into shows like Milwaukee. I did it once. It was a great show.
It's a nice show. Okay, somebody is trying to talk and is muted.
That would be me.
Okay.
Thanks. I was wondering if anyone has done Morning Glory in Wisconsin before. It's over in Milwaukee, and they just moved it to the Fiserv Center last summer, I guess. I was applying this year, but obviously they canceled. So just looking to see if anyone has done that one here before.
I did it in the old location quite a few years ago, maybe 6 or 7 years ago. I didn't bother applying. I didn't bother applying again.
No,
I know other people that do well.
Yeah, I think just like any show, it depends on who shows up that day and what you have.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I think I heard that the new location was going to be a good one. I'm trying to remember.
Yeah. It's at the Fiserv Center, so it's a pretty big complex, of course, and it's still outside. I know somebody who did it last year, and they said it was really nice, and it's fairly easy in and out. I think for loading, they have different locations, but I still think you have to dolly in, and then parking around that area is kind of expensive, but they have parking and hotels right at or near the Fiserv Center.
Well, it was a long haul getting in to the old location as far as where my booth was. But I think my booth was the furthest from the street. Beautiful location, but hard to deal with.
Yeah, hard to navigate.
Yeah.
It's a lot of miles you put on.
I would love to know how many miles are on my hand truck.
I know that one show I did 30,000 steps over the week. On one day.
That's a lot of steps.
Yeah. But I've gotten into the habit of trying to get a hotel close to the show and being able to walk back to the hotel. And just parking with the band is my biggest issue sometimes, certain cities.
For me, walking through the city with my jewelry is more of an issue.
No.
I tend to stay out.
Yeah, an armed security guard.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was near Trisco at a show in Atlanta a couple of weeks after they were robbed in Miami Beach. And they had an armed security guard in the booth with them.
Wow.
Well, he's been robbed more than once. But if nothing else, all the robberies got me out of doing, took me from all gold to mixed metals. So I could at least think I was a little safer.
I don't bring my camera or my laptop unless I'm staying over Sunday night so that it can stay in the hotel instead of, because I did two shows in Tampa one weekend. I did the second one was Mainsail. First one was a Howard Allen. And at Mainsail, a guy came around with a list of stuff that had been stolen from him at the Howard Allen show from the parking garage. And that's when I stopped carrying the camera and the laptop unless I was staying moving.
Well, a friend of mine was robbed. He's a jeweler. Right after leaving a show in Lafayette, Indiana. And I was at the show. I was totally oblivious as we're taking down. And my husband said, "What's going on with that guy over there?" And we basically watched him, watch this group stake him out. And I went inside and got a police officer, and he stood behind my booth with his arms crossed. But, yeah, and then Bill was hit after he left. So I trust no one anymore. Especially, I mean, I didn't even key in on it. I think I'm so attuned to people acting strangely or, you know, things like that. Nah, totally oblivious.
Where was that again, Bonnie? And was the person you speak of also selling jewelry?
Yes, it was in Lafayette, Indiana, around the fountain. Lovely little show. And yes, and that retired him from shows. He was, yes, that was jewelry is what I, yeah. And that's my only story.
My stuff is a little large to carry off. I worry about the iPad. Plus, as I tell people, it's not worth much of a pawn shop as opposed to jewelry.
Hey, Larry, where are our topics for today?
What?
Where are our topics for today? Oh, sorry.
It's whatever comes up. Frank, do you have anything to add? You're muted. Everybody. Yeah.
Well, you know, I had nothing to say, so I didn't bother to unmute.
Right.
All these stories about crime at shows, I've been lucky. I mean, not exhibiting, I'm less vulnerable, but still, I haven't been exposed to it except at secondhand.
It's scary.
So that every show I go to, I look for where would I hide, where would I run? That's what I'm afraid of. And I started doing that at Virginia Beach because there were so many people that weren't there for the show. And it's a whole different crowd. But it's gotten a little scary out there sometimes. Not this year.
Allison, was that the Neptune Festival or something else? Virginia Beach?
Boardwalk Festival. What do y'all think about it? It looks like Boardwalk is now going to October of 2021.
That's too late.
I think it is too.
It's cold and windy there that time of year.
And you don't, I mean, I got a lot of impulse buys from people who were there for the beach.
So, I thought they were, that was going to be this year. What are you talking about for next year?
For next year.
Yeah, see, even the Neptune Festival is kind of late. And it kind of depends on what conventions they're having. Because we used to do the Boardwalk Show, and then when they required photographs to be numbered, we started doing the Neptune Festival. And I remember there was a paramedics convention going on the same weekend as the Neptune Show. And that was every year, it was the same thing.
Yeah, the lawyers' convention is on during Boardwalk. Because I always
see my much better buyer's market.
Yes. My daughter's a paralegal, and I used to always see her boss. We would say hi. Yeah, what was I thinking? Oh, well. It'll come back to me.
Yeah, but after the beginning of October, outdoor shows are really iffy.
Yeah, I know. The last one I do is the second weekend in October, and it's almost always the one that's cold.
Yeah.
And the email from Virginia Beach said that they were pushing it so far out because they wanted to give every chance of not being canceled.
Right. So we're talking about maybe only 1 year.
Right. I think that they'll probably go back to the normal date.
Yeah, the end of June.
Assuming everything is going back to normal.
So everything's going back to normal after tomorrow, right?
Either that or chaos.
Yeah, it's scary.
I want a new kind of normal, please.
Yeah, you know, I think it, you know, we have to do masks for everybody. And I think if we just did masks for everybody, it would really cut back.
Well, it would. But how do you convince half of the country?
I'll chime in a little bit. We have had a mask mandate here for months here in Wisconsin. Anytime I go out into a grocery store or have to run into a hardware store, everybody has a mask. There's signs up for wearing masks. I almost never see anybody without a mask. And we have the highest rates in the country right now. So it's kind of confusing.
And I learned, well, I don't know, in Virginia we have a mask mandate, but my husband works for county government. And apparently they can't do anything about county government because he's probably one of 4 or 5 people that wears a mask. Everybody else is exercising their constitutional right, whatever.
Yeah, but it's not a constitutional right.
Well, I can tell you all about my screen room that's being built right now.
All right.
Oh. You know, it's so funny. There's so little going on that isn't COVID or politics. I'm hoping this is going to distract me.
I got a new front porch.
Lovely.
It's not very big, but it's, before we just had stairs going out the front door, stairs going down. So now I've got like an 8-foot sitting area. So apparently my new chair is coming in. I ordered myself a rocking chair and I got myself a little table. So now that it's freezing outside, I can go sit out on the front porch.
Kind of like me. I'm going to sit in Michigan in a screened-in porch in November. Sure.
It'll be nice.
Oh, well, you could do that at noon for at least 5 minutes, Bonnie.
Trust me, I'm going to.
Yeah, don't they call that a Florida room?
No, I think you have to have glass.
No, you need glass.
I thought it's just the whole room is screened in.
No, it's glass. The Florida room is glass.
Okay.
I mean, in Florida, it could be screened in. When we were looking at houses down in Florida, we looked at one with a Florida room, and I went into the Florida room, and it was like it was baking.
Yeah,
because it was getting full sunlight, and it was like, okay, this is not quite what I had in mind.
Well, hopefully this is just what I'm looking for. The bugs love me. I can be, you know, a mile away, and the bugs, I'll go outside, and the bugs will start swarming. So I'm hoping this will get me outside more.
That's our plan for the back of the house. One day we'll put on the screen porch.
Yeah, I thought this was the perfect time to do it because I'm home and, you know, mm-hmm. Well, everybody and their brother had the same idea. So I took
twice as long because the guy was having trouble getting wood.
I understand that is a huge problem. Well, mine was scheduled for, or I paid for it in July, and now it's November. So, yeah, but the wood issue is very serious.
Yeah. He was supposed to finish in a weekend, and it took him 2 weeks because he just had to go all over getting the pieces.
Yeah. Okay, that's my contribution. I've given you 2 stories.
All right.
Come on, guys.
Okay, well, I spent 15 hours this weekend photographing religious paintings.
Okay.
That was an interesting email I got back from you, Larry. It's like, the nuns are about to be here. I'm like, what?
Right. I mean, I do this for them gratis every year. This year, instead of having a dinner, which obviously they can't do, they're going online with an online auction site. So they needed all their stuff photographed and then resized to a certain pixel dimensions for the auction website. So I spent 15 hours doing it this weekend.
That was nice of you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's fun. I enjoy helping them out.
It's a good cause.
Mm-hmm.
I hosted a Zoom meeting for the Barnard Temple Men's Club yesterday. A psychologist was encouraging us to talk about how we feel about the pandemic. He said men talk about what they think about as opposed to what they feel, and he has to keep encouraging them to talk about what they feel. That was a takeaway for several people.
I think that's true.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you feel about it, Frank?
I feel that it's a dark, dark cloud with some very bright silver linings.
Excellent.
The silver linings are, you know, the fact that it didn't happen until Zoom was here. And the fact that Zoom is turning out to be a really cool, useful, wonderful tool in ways that weren't expected. Our synagogue attendance on a Friday night is triple what it was live.
Wow.
Yeah. And one of my clients, she's an antiques dealer, lives in Ohio, she said her church has quadrupled attendance online. So, and we did High Holy Days online, a lot of it pre-recorded, some of it live. And there was one of my friends who's going to be 88 in a couple weeks. He said, in his whole life, he's never had such a good High Holy Days because the intimacy was powerful. It made him really feel involved in a way that sitting in a room with hundreds of other people where you can see, you know, little figures talking at you doesn't do. You know, he was face to face with the rabbi. So there are silver linings. There are really, you know, and people yesterday were saying, you know, gee, I never knew how much I hated commuting till I didn't have to do it anymore. You know, there were people who were saying, God, I'd take commuting back just to hang out with, you know, the people I work with. But it's, you know, it's curses and blessings intermixed in really weird ways.
Yeah. I worked from home for a Florida company for 7 years, and I wish we had had Zoom. Because, well, I thought it was, you know, when I got told I could work from home when my husband had to move to Virginia, I was like, woohoo, woohoo. Well, there's a lot of drawbacks to working from home. And one of the biggest ones was there was no, you know, camaraderie with people and trying to be on the phone with people that were in the office. It would have been a lot nicer if we could have had Zoom meetings and seen faces.
Yeah. One of the things that's really wonderful for me is trying to do tech support with Zoom versus trying to do it on the phone. You know, if somebody is having a weird problem with their computer and they're describing it and I haven't a clue. When we share screen, now I understand what they're talking about. It can be so much more helpful.
Can't you access their computer?
I've never tried to do that. With Zoom, I can, but
no,
you know,
there are programs that allow you to actually be on their computer.
Oh yeah, absolutely. But you know, I wasn't doing professional tech support for people. This was mostly for friends. What I am doing now is instead of building bespoke websites from scratch, I'm doing tutoring on how to use Weebly or Squarespace, where I put their, I set them up to share their screen, and I talk them through what they have to do. And when they make a mistake, I can see exactly what they're doing wrong. And so it's very effective in a way that it would have been much, much harder without these sort of screen shares.
Oh, that would be fantastic.
Yeah, I was going to say, Bonnie needs help with her new laptop.
Well, Bonnie, you know, I'll give you my email address and we can do something.
I already have it from one time before.
All right. Well, then you don't need my email address. Just send me an email and we'll schedule something.
Well, I live with an IT guy.
Okay.
So as far as moving the stuff over, he should be able to.
Oh, hey, I'd much rather you do that then.
But I may talk to you. Well, I'm planning on talking to you about Squarespace.
Okay.
Thank sure. You.
So if I know what I'm doing, I'm going to, and I think I can charge a fair fixed price, I'm going to do that. Otherwise, it's $120 an hour. So the setting up the websites where I'm basically helping somebody with Weebly or Squarespace, it will depend on whether it's an e-commerce site or not. If it's not an e-commerce site, I haven't absolutely finalized the prices, but a brochureware site, a relatively simple site, will be $750, and an e-commerce site will be $1,250. That, you know, it's not going to change dramatically, but that's not a final price yet. But that's the ballpark.
Got it. Thank you.
Frank, what is your email address?
FPIUCK@cyberhenge.com, which is CYBERHENGE.
Oh, you're going too fast for me. FPIUCK?
My first name is Frank, so it's my first.
Yeah, I got it.
Show my last name, in which you can read on my. On
yeah,
my
I see that. Here. Yeah, I've got that. But what's the and rest of it?
At CyberHenge is my company name. So it's cyber is in cyberspace, CYBER, and henge is in Stonehenge. henge.com.
Okay.
Trying to marry the ancient and the modern in one word.
You did it.
Some people get it and think it's really cute.
I think the com is pretty modern. The .com is pretty modern.
The .com is pretty modern, yes. Well, the cyber is modern and the hinge is ancient. So.
Yeah.
I have a question, Frank. I've been doing a little testing on my website and it's a very simple website, and I had people, when you go in, you see like the room with the pictures, you know, the little staged room. And I was wondering, I tried taking that out and going straight to the galleries of pictures. I wonder if you have any thoughts on that.
From a design standpoint?
A design standpoint.
I think you really need some sort of lobby to your hotel, so to speak. I think a homepage is a way for people to orient themselves. You know, there are no rules that are absolute in this. You know, there's better and worse answers, and I'm sure you could have a gallery. I mean, I've seen galleries on the homepage, and it's not a terrible thing by any means, but I think it's better to have a picture, or maybe a slideshow, and this is what I'm about, and this is what I'm doing, and here are the galleries over here. It's a personal preference. And of course, I've been doing this for so many years. I've been through, I don't know how many different design paradigms that I'm behind on. You know,
yeah.
I was, when I started, you know, pictures had to be compressed or the site would take forever to load and nobody would see them because they'd be gone, right? And now they're built assuming, you know, really high quality broadband and it's a standard now to have very long, actually multiple pages all on one scrollable page, right? So you see one, you have a screen sized thing and you scroll down and it's a different view with a different text. And then you scroll down and it's another different view and a different text. And I've seen it done really well where somebody is actually linearly trying to tell a story, and it's like little chapters, little mini chapters. Each screen is, and it can be done well. But then on other people, they just go on, and they, you get completely lost. And I'm like, let's take advantage of this little box you have, which you first see, to convey as much information as you can without overwhelming somebody and without, you know, with maintaining some white space and some aesthetics, and then give them things to click on to take them to other places, and use newspaper style, old fashioned newspaper style writing with headline and most important stuffs in the first paragraph and declining importance as you go down as best you can figure out what that should be. And writing from the point of view of what does your customer want? What does your visitor want? Rather than what you think is important, you know, put yourself in their shoes, in their head, write the message that is going to keep them interested to get them to what, you know, whether it's selling art or selling a service or making a contribution to a synagogue or whatever it is, you want to give them some guidance, but also some freedom, and not be too complicated. And you know, that's one of my new missions in life now. If I'm helping people set up websites that they can manage themselves, is, you know, the thing that I'm going to be better at than they are, since they've never done it before, is one, bringing that outsider point of view, which nobody can get out of their own head. You always need somebody else to help you with that. And but also saying, okay, this is what navigation, logical navigation, looks like. And this is, think in terms of your viewport as, you know, this key, the first view of your website is really important. And if you have a header that fills the whole screen, and then somebody clicks on a hot link and they don't know they've changed screens, you haven't done yourself or them a service. So there are all these mistakes I see people make. You know, people confuse a good looking website with a good website. And certainly I'm not against aesthetics, but it's nowhere near the most important thing. The most important thing is clarity of message.
Okay, yeah. Frank.
Yes.
That, your statement that you need to write it for what your customers are looking for is spectacular.
Thank you.
That everybody needs to listen to that one.
Thank you.
It's not what we want necessarily everyone to know, but what they want to know.
Yep.
And Allison, gotta have a homepage.
Oh, I have basically my homepage there's a menu across the top, and that's got all the things like about me and galleries, exhibits, shows, things, and that's all in the menu across the top. And then on the underneath that is the four different galleries of vertical panoramas, horizontal panoramas, standards, and groupings. And then there's a picture with each one that I change on a regular basis. So it's something new each time. But I think
now, a customer, I want to know a little bit about you without having to click on the About tab. But when I go to the homepage, I want to get an overview of what I'm going to find on your page, on your site. I want to know something. I want to be drawn in by your story. Mm-hmm. This being said, I do a ridiculous amount of online shopping.
Even before the pandemic?
I'm doing a lot more now.
Yeah.
Well, of course.
But yes, I was pretty good before the pandemic, but now I'm hitting primarily artist sites. Mm-hmm. I can't buy big things, but I'm trying to spread it around.
I had a boss tell me once in a performance review that my conversation was too net. So I'm kind of a bottom line kind of person. But maybe I need to, I didn't, yeah, I think maybe it's a little bit of my story, or a little bit of, you know, this is who I am on the front page. And then they scroll down to the galleries.
I would say, you know, one, you know, yes, you want to get people, most of it should be on the about page, but a paragraph about you on the homepage makes a great deal of sense. And then a paragraph about your art and how people use it makes sense on the homepage. You know, the fact that you have single panels and groupings and such, and why somebody would prefer one to the other in their home versus in their office, or, you know, some brief explanation that you can then amplify in another page as well. How to shop my site best page might be useful.
Excellent. Oh, that's great.
You know, I mean, if you're a jeweler, I'm not sure that's necessary, but you are doing these interesting combinations, Allison. So giving people some understanding of how you think they should be shopping could be very helpful to them.
It would be. I like that. As a shopper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And having told you all this, I'm wrestling with the current copy on my site, because it's like, well, everything on there belongs there, but it's not in the right order. But what is the right order? And it's,
you need somebody else to review it.
Well, actually, I've asked somebody I know who's a copywriter to look at the site and give me a quote.
You're too close.
Well, exactly. I am. Absolutely. Yeah. I took a marketing class. I mean, I've got an MBA, so I've had a lot of marketing, you know, in professional context. But I took a marketing class that was sort of a condensed thing about a year ago. And it was very good. I was very impressed at how smart the woman was and how well she summarized, you know, this amorphous mass of information into something quite coherent. And this is one of the takeaways that she had. But I was in the chat with all the other people who were wrestling with things, and they're saying, well, have you thought about this? And have you thought about that? And Esty told us this, and you could think about that. And everybody thought I was so smart. And meantime, I'm floundering on my own stuff. It's like, your problems are so much easier for me than my own. And I know other people have felt exactly the same way about their own problems versus mine. Yeah, it's just getting out of your own head, and it's really, really hard. So
totally. Sorry.
Go ahead, Bonnie.
I totally understand that. You know, I have an answer to just about any other problem other than my own.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's just common stuff. Common. I don't know. I have a strange question off topic. Larry, when did you and Chris start doing websites? Back in the day?
Yeah. Front page 97 or 98.
That's what I used for my first website.
So we're talking about 1997, 96, 97.
I thought it was earlier than that. Interesting.
Well, it might have been a year earlier. It depends on, it was front page. So it depends on when it was available.
Almost as long
Chris
as I
was doing it. Chris was writing code to do websites rather than using front page, you know, before front page. So he was doing it earlier than that.
Okay, so I should ask him.
I hired Chris to build my teddy bear website, and he froze. So I went and I stayed at his house for a couple of days, and we built it together, and that's how I learned how to do it. So then I gave him a choice: either become partners and we'll do websites together, or we'll become competitors. And we became partners.
Well, Chris did my first one, but it was, I think it was long before that.
Yeah, so he built it by code, you know, coding right. by hand. Yeah, that's how he did, I think, Mark Mellon's first website. Those were some of his earlier sites.
Yeah.
That's a lot of work.
Well, there was no other option at that time.
Yeah. I did my first one in 2003 in Front Page. And it stuck around a long time until mobile phones came out, and then it didn't work with mobile phones. And at one point, I had all my stuff on Etsy because I didn't have a very good shopping cart. So if you clicked on the picture, it took you to the Etsy page for the picture. And then I got...
I have a temporary site up. Now, it was supposed to only be temporary. I was really busy at the time, so Dick helped me, and we just got this up. And it wasn't for selling, it was just for advertising shows and where I was going to be and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. It's been a lot of years. So
sometimes temporary expedients last longer than the permanent ones.
Oh,
I did my first website in about 2003, and it's pretty close to what it was then. But I used the application called Freeway Express, which was British. And it was really good because they had somebody in the Chicago areas where I live who was helping people who were using the program, you know. So that was really good, and I got it done. But I never really redid it. I never sold much off the web. I was only almost always at shows because my work is kind of big and abstract. And people would call me up, and they asked where to see it. So then I'd tell them. Or they would send me an email of where to send it. But never did a lot off of it. But one of the reasons I'm getting back into this a little bit is I'd like to get into something where I don't have to schlep anything around, because I'm not going to do that anymore. And my work is heavy, and it's hard to move. And it'd be impossible now at my age to do it. So impossible. It would just kill me, that's all. So I would... I'm looking for some sort of format where people can sell without doing the show business. The show thing, I think, is out of date. I don't know what it is, but I think it's out of date. It's just like something that happened. And now that this happened and we got Zoom and other things maybe coming in, there may be better ways of doing shopping for artwork. I don't know.
Well, having attended, I don't know how many hundreds of art shows over the last 15 years, I think they will come back. And I really don't think you can compare what you see on a screen to the reality for an awful lot of work. I mean, it's certainly way better than not being able to sell at all. And somebody who has some prior familiarity is definitely can get a lot out of a website. And some kinds of art work very well on a screen. So Allison's stuff, just looking at behind her, I think looks really, really good. And I could see people buying that online without being horrified when they got it. But
the ship, which is why I haven't. If I sell, I think I've sold like 4 or 5 actual large frame pieces this year, and they've all been delivered or picked up. People don't buy, and I've tried to figure that out, because one thing Shopify does that I don't like is they don't give you the shipping until the very end. But I haven't seen anybody abandon the shopping cart with one of my large pieces in it. So I don't know if the shipping really bothers them, but it's $150 to ship one of these.
Yeah. My work is very expensive to ship, especially if I have to create it.
If they want it, they will gladly pay it.
Right. That's the way I feel.
Let me raise my hand.
Right.
Sold a lot of points. at least I can sell, you know, and I've told people, if you've got to be shipped to, you know, the Midwest or something, buy a print and take the money you saved and take it to a local framer.
And then they'll be shocked at what it costs to have it framed. They're going to think, I was better off the other way.
I get some pushback at shows about how
Hi, everybody. I got it.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.
I've got
Dennis. Something to show you, you know, that why is it so much more for the frame piece than the print? And then I probably, during the normal show year, get about 3 local people calling me saying, can I trade the print and pay you the difference and get a frame piece? Which I do. Because they go to the framer and it's a lot more expensive because at least I buy everything in bulk, everything's the same size. And you can have one choice of mats and that's white over black. And that's it.
I'm involved with a virtual show that started today. And it's a little bit different. This virtual show is actually in a virtual room. So our pieces, there's 27 artists involved and a painting from each artist. So the pictures are put into an already designed room minus our frames. And it's just our cropped pictures. And it looks extremely interesting. I like it. I've never been in a virtual room before. And I'll give you the site if you'd like to go up and take a look at it. If you got a pen or pencil, it's thevoiceofart.org /Warren-The Secret Garden. So there's dash in between Warren the Secret Garden. There's a dash in between each one, 3 dashes. So that's going
secret
on.
Secret-Garden?
Right. So it's Warren-The-Secret-Garden.
Okay.
Financially, it only cost me $20 to enter 2, but I entered 4 for 40 and they only picked 1. But they didn't tell me they were going to do that, but that's all right. So it's on virtual for 2 months, and we have an actual building that we brought the work up to that it's going to hang for a month. It's at a lovely inn in Litchfield, Connecticut. But I think I had heard about virtual rooms before for people in meetings. It's been going on for well over 10 years, I think.
Yeah.
So here... And we've been able to go into museums into the virtual way too, I know, for quite some time. But Warren, I thought
Dennis, by the way, you have to put in discover-Warren-The Secret Garden.
Well, I was able to I was able to reach it as www.thevoiceofart.org // Warren, the Secret Garden.
Okay. Mine came up as /discover-Warren-The-Secret-Garden. It looks so nice. I just wanted everyone to be able to find it.
Maybe it's the difference because you've seen it.
So you just to finish up, when you go on the site, you just punch onto the virtual gallery, and then that it shows you how to go into it and how to walk around it. And anyway, I just want to put my 2 cents in on that.
I will definitely take a look.
Okay.
I think you missed earlier that I watched this show that I'm in. They had a meeting, and the first person they had speak was the event me person. And she made a very good point that people were getting upset that they had to go outside of the show to different websites to actually shop. So that it's not the same thing, but it's kind of everything is in one place and you can go from different artists to different artists without having to go off to their website, which made a lot of sense to me.
One of my clients is the partner in a live show that has gone virtual, and they did their first virtual this fall. And they have the e-commerce, they use Shopify, and they basically had their exhibitors load art into forms and uploaded into Shopify. And it was a lot of administrative work, a lot of tech work, a lot of cleanup, and they're trying to figure out a way to do it better. So they've asked me to help them reconfigure it for their next edition. So I'm going to know a lot more about virtual shows in another month or two than I do now.
I just looked at the show that Dennis was talking about. It's laid out really nicely. The easiest way to get there is just do Voice of Art, and Secret Garden is a Google search, and it takes you right there.
Okay. I don't expect anybody to be walking into the actual show at the Litchfield Inn to see it, but at least they made an attempt for the work to be hanging. And there's not going to be a reception. And we have a little bit of a spike here in Connecticut at 6.1%. So things have pulled back a bit. Banks have gotten a little tighter with going in, and our church has closed down for 2 weeks, and they're back back on Zoom again. So there's a little bit of a pullback.
Yeah, I was kind of anti-eventing in the beginning, but I've set up my site, and I think it looks really nice. So we'll see. I'll know on the 12th through the 16th is the show.
Yeah, send me a link to it, to your site.
Okay. I'm not sure if you can get in yet, if you can see it. I'll send you my
login. Oh, you mean until the show opens?
Right. I can send you my login information. I trust you.
We can wait. It's only a week and a half.
Yeah, if you go to the main EventMe site, then they've got a list of shows, and you can click on that one show. But I'll send you the information.
Okay. Unless anybody else has anything else they want to bring up, I have to go feed the dogs.
Okay, Larry, thank you for doing this, as always.
Thank you. Nice next seeing week. Everyone.
Thank yeah. you.
See you next time.
Hi, everybody.
Hi.
Bonnie. Oh, she's gone. Okay. All right. Bye. I'm going to end.